There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm trying my best. I'm trying to be a better person in society. I don't want to be this piece of shit person that's going to go back to jail, you know, because this is just not a good person. I want to live live a happy life. I've made my mistakes. I've said my apologies. You know, I'm just trying to be a better person. You know, I've gone through issues like everyone else in the world, especially with COVID. But I know I'm getting better. I know I'm on the right track.
Sir, what if the writer is attempting to create a story where nothing much happens? Change. More reflection of the real world.
Nothing happens in the world? Are you out of your fucking mind?
Welcome to A Theory of Mind, a podcast about brains, minds, and the lived-in experience of change. I'm your host, author and biographer Ben McKelvey, and this week we have a really special guest, or at least a guest that means quite a lot to me personally. It's former UFC Pride and K1 great Mark Hunt. Now, Mark is someone that I've known for 6 years, and I'll preempt this this podcast with a little short story about one of our first meetings. In 2015, I'd been contracted to write a book with Mark, my first, and the negotiations between Mark and the publisher had taken some time. So when we actually got down to the writing, there was only a few months left for me to do the interviews and turn the copy over to my publisher. I first met Mark at a Western Sydney food court for one of our first interview sessions. And one of my first questions for Mark was about his parents, you know, who they were, where they were from, what they did, all that kind of stuff. I knew a little bit about Mark already, but there wasn't any public information about his family, so I thought that'd be a great place to start. Anyway, after those questions, they really locked Mark up. He wasn't the most forthcoming person at that point in time, especially with strangers. And this was especially true when investigating a serious and hidden trauma that we discovered later on. The silence from Mark continued over a few sessions, and I started to wonder, A, whether I was going to get a book out of this guy, and B, whether he was going to at some point punch me right out of the window of the Westfield food court. Eventually, finally, Mark told me to find his estranged sister, Victoria, who I did and who thankfully was in a place in her life to talk to me about what happened to her and to Mark and their brother, Stephen John. I wrote the first chapter of the book that became Born to Fight, primarily with Victoria and with very little input from Mark. And that stuff that I wrote then is pretty much what's in the published version. After I read that chapter out to Mark, though, it was as though some sort of blockage had been removed. You know, there was just this sort of veil that had been lifted. The rest in the book is all Mark. You know, he really opened up, and he says those sessions working on the book together sort of became his first therapy sessions. Mark talks a little bit about what he's doing in therapy in this conversation, and I've also added some readings from the book for context. This isn't a heavy and depressing conversation, but there are mentions of child sexual abuse, assault, and suicide. So please be duly warned about that. Also of note, this conversation was recorded before Mark's latest fight with Gallen, which was a decision loss for Mark. Anyway, without further ado, Mark Hunt.
I've grown as a person.
Oh,
grown as a man. I can feel a lot better with myself with things. But I'm actually finding myself a lot more happier.
Yeah.
I've had a few issues that I'm just moving on with, and
let's talk about that. We will get to that, but first I sort of wanted to talk to you a little bit about humility, right? So you know, I went up to Newcastle and hung out with you recently, and you were training with an amateur boxer, and he was a young guy and he had a long range, and he was landing on you a lot.
He's hiding. Yeah,
but this is the thing, you know, you are one of the world's great fighters,
yeah.
And you've got this kid.
He's in there my mind,
his
in,
mum's there as well. Well, yes,
yeah.
You know, in your mind, and also yes. In your results, in a lot of ways as well. And you know, this young kid, his mum's sitting there, and you know, like he's putting blood in your mouth. Yeah. So how are you responding to humility? I mean, I can imagine previously it would have been like, you know, oh, I want to get back and, you know, get this guy and hurt this guy. But that's not really where you're at anymore.
No, it's about learning. It's about, for me, 46, life's given me a lot of ups and downs and good blows and bads. I've learned a lot about, I've, especially now with forgiveness. But with fighting, with Tristram and these other young kids, he's been training since he was seven.
Yeah.
I'm inspiring another guy named Tommy. I think was the Australian champ also. More with humility, learning about this new sport. It's not new, but to me, it's a new business. I mean, I haven't even got a boxing win in my career.
Yeah.
It's like one loss and one draw. But
that was Bondi Diggers, weren't you?
Yeah.
Your first boxing fight? Yeah.
Bondi straight from the bar to, getting beat up by John Wyborn, the digger. So, and here I am, I think 20 something years later, and I've got some 22-year-old kid teeing me up.
Yeah.
It's a real lesson to learn. It's like, but it's one of those pills. I'm getting way better with everything. But
imagine when this was happening, when I first met you, there would have been a lot of anger if this guy was tooling you up. But now anger is not your driving motivator anymore. You've actually done a really incredible job of managing to get a lot of anger out of your psyche.
Yeah, there's a lot of people to be thankful for that. My psychologist, to be honest, is one of them.
Yeah, of course.
Learning about myself, some people that I met along the way that had, made me understand that you've got to, forgive yourself, forgive people for doing these sort of things. And, most of all, forgiving yourself for being, you didn't have to be that treacherous person or that angry person going around because, the world doesn't owe you nothing. But you can actually be a better person like that. I'm, like I said, I don't have to be – Mr. Angry doesn't come out looking for fights all the time.
Yeah.
Mr. Angry is being pushed back. He's sitting on that log in the stomach with the rest of the emotions. I'm learning about not being a 13-year-old mental case, and I'm 46 years old. It's a real experience for me with all this. So it's been great.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the talk therapy that you've been doing. When I met you, you'd probably seen a psychologist once. I think you'd been to maybe once or twice. You had talked about your wife, who's now becoming your ex-wife, a little bit about your experiences when you were a kid. But now you are actually doing this work. You are meeting a psychologist pretty regularly. Whatever you're comfortable sharing, can you talk a little bit about the experience and what you're doing?
A psychologist, a therapist during the week, and a psychologist. It's about learning about myself and trying to grow emotionally, because as a kid I never had to never dealt with emotions, because it was always you had to try and put those emotions away because you're always getting hurt.
Yeah.
And that's what my parents taught, my dad taught me, was when he's hitting you and you have to get past that pain, that crying and pain, to try and I think it, to me with him dealing with just survival, to be honest.
Yeah.
And there's a point when you're getting whacked in the same places with weapons, whatever, sticks and whatever, that it becomes numb. Then you just become numb with all. But I never was able to experience that sort of stuff, like I'm feeling sad or this and that. It's just, I have to deal with it because I was, so young. Mm. But as a 46-year-old male, the therapist has helped me, bring out those emotions. And pure anger is really good for you. Pure anger, not anger where you can kill a person in a second. So in that therapy, one of the therapy sessions, like I was able to kill my mum multiple times, like in that room, it was safe to do it,
without anyone actually getting hurt.
No one's getting hurt. It's just myself putting the anger where it should be and trying to get to that pure anger where that pure anger helps you grow as a person. It's not that anger where you just goes, oh, there's something happening, Mr. Anger comes out. It's pure anger. It doesn't have any of those things. It just makes you, because, you heal after that.
It's like a boil. You know, the pressure goes.
Yes.
You pop the boil and then, but for a long time, it seemed to me that, there was this sort of underlying anger and the pain was perpetually there, but the release was never there, I might just read a couple of pages of Born to Fight here, just for a little bit of context, so you kind of have an understanding of what Mark's upbringing was like. This is page 8 in the first chapter of Born to Fight. Dad would beat us for any little thing and with any implement, fists, feet, broom handles, sticks, electrical cords, that hose that went from the washing machine to the tap. That last one really sucked because it was heavy and it hurt like hell when Dad got it really going. And no matter how hard you got beat with it, that thing never broke. With that hose, Dad could just whoop us until he got tired. And he had energy for that work, man. He loved that hose. He was big on psychological pain too, my old man. A beating he seemed to particularly enjoy was forcing us onto our knees on the floor in the sitting room, facing out the window at the pear tree where he'd go and spend time carefully selecting a whooping branch. We'd hope for a new young branch or an old one ready to break, but he'd usually end up with something hefty and durable. Another one of his favourites was calling us over and when we got there throwing all of his weight into a thigh punch. He'd fall on the ground with a dead leg and then he'd have you. You couldn't run, you just had to lie there and he'd wait for him to do whatever he wanted to do to you. Was he going to get the hose? Was he going to get the broom? Were you going to get the boot? Are those his footsteps? He also used to like making us beat each other. And if we ever cried, he'd jump in with his man fists and feet. All the beatings were worse if we cried. If we cried, the extra strikes were on us. At the end, the blame was usually equally shared. We shouldn't have been so weak. When I saw the movie Wolf Creek, that cruel bastard of a main character, Mick Taylor, reminded me of my dad. He would have made a good torturer, the old fella. He really put his heart and soul into the sadism. I used to think that my older brother, Steve, got the worst of it. He was the oldest boy and the biggest and the one most likely to know better than to do whatever it was that us little kids shouldn't be doing. That's why he got his head smashed into the wall and into the door. Now I suspect it was just because Dad had had more time to resent him. I used to think Victoria got off relatively lightly. That didn't mean she didn't get beaten. She was in charge of us boys and trying to keep us clean and in line. And when she didn't manage it, which was pretty much always, she would get the crap beaten out of her too, but not as bad as us. We all thought Dad was soft on Victoria. He used to take her into a room with him. But inside, we wouldn't hear the crashes and thumps of a beating, nor would there be blood or bruises when she came out. And she wasn't fair as far as we knew. We thought something odd was happening in that room, but we didn't know that something was heinous and sinful. We used to dare each other to go in. Thank fuck we never did. This is page 16 in the first chapter. There were too many stories, too much chatter. It was all too open now. Everyone had always known, but until then they'd known about it in whispers, in soft gossip, quite enough for it to be ignored after a muted chat. Now it was out on the streets. I wasn't relieved when Dad was taken to prison. I was too young to understand the whole situation. I knew he was going away and that there'd be even less food in the house. I also knew he was going away because of Victoria. And I'm sorry to say I was angry with her because of that. We all were. But we didn't know any better. Except Mum. She knew better. Or she should have anyway. But her concern at the time was keeping Victoria from telling the cops the whole story. They were the leanest of days when the old man was in prison, when we got to the point of delirium. I remember all of us in the front room shouting hungry at people while they walked down the street. When they saw us, we'd giggle like hyenas. I guess we were laughing about the contrast between the orderly, peaceful world outside and the tumult of crap that was going down in our house. The weirdest thing is that Mum used to laugh along with us, screaming at the people on the street. That's some crazy shit. We didn't know what was happening to us. We didn't know that it was bad. We were kids. We'd only ever lived in a household where up was down and wrong was right. All we knew was that Dad was away and that there wasn't any food. Dad came back pretty quickly and Mum offered Victoria a new bicycle to shut up about the whole thing. I remember we all piled into the car to go and pick him up from the bus stop down at the shops. We all wanted to see the old man, except for Victoria, of course. When I saw him, I felt sorry for him. He had hollow eyes and a lonely, sad way about him. I'd never seen him like that before. As soon as he got into the car, though, he slowly started to become himself again. And after a few weeks, he pretty much went back to how it had been before. Except that Dad lost his job and there was even less food then.
Yeah, I've learned, especially with the counselling, it's a... You got to get to experience and put the. I've never had to being able to experience their emotions and trying to grow from that. I am a good person, a kind person. That's I've had so many mechanisms to try and stop those emotions too, because feeling is pain, and that's what the counselor Stephanie said. Mike, you've got to be able to notice and see those things.
Yeah.
It's like watching clouds go by. You don't have to go and look at that cloud and stay with it. When you see an emotion go by, you can look at it and okay, I can see what that is. That's anger. I can see what this is. And noticing all the mechanisms, like some of the mechanisms I do is I turn stuff on myself. So when you start self-sabotaging yourself, it doesn't help you at all because then you start getting depression.
Yeah.
You know, when people say with things, he goes, oh, Mark, and I say, well, I'm this and that and this and whatever, and I've turned it, that emotion back on me, which is a self-sabotage, which isn't good.
Which you've done throughout your life.
Throughout my life, you know.
You beat yourself up really badly.
Yeah, no, I don't think just me. I think many people do that. They just say, oh, well, I'm a piece of shit, this and that. Like when I'm fighting sometimes and I'm getting the shit kicked out of me, is, well, you deserve that because you're in a train, you're a fuckwit, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And but that's one thing I have to try and learn is to turn that back around. I said, it's not me. I mean, I'm this, this, and this, but I don't have to try and turn that into myself and be like that. I have to feel that emotion so it goes.
And that you even used to do that with the points of pride in your life as well. So when you were fighting, when you were winning, you'd be like, "Oh, I'm still just a punching bag. You know, I'm still just a this, that, and whatever. You know." So you would never give yourself that
any credit.
Yeah.
And the thing was, that's what I've learned. I've had to learn is that okay, that happened, but you don't have to turn it because you're a piece of shit or because you're this or that. That's just not you. You don't have to turn that yourself on yourself to make it bad so you can become depressed.
One of the things that is interesting and that I think sort of goes through the book is that, you know, you have had these traumatic experiences when you were a kid and there has been bad elements of that, but then there's also been a resilience and a strength through that as well, you know. And this is something that you said to me many times is you're like, you know, your dad was one of the people who can credit your fighting career. Mm. So tell me about those early days when you were fighting on the streets in South Auckland. Why do you think you were so compelled to fight, you know? Is it because it was the one thing that you could feel good about?
Well, I don't know. I like I said, I was better outside on the streets than at home. You know, there was nothing at home. It was just, you know, some piece of shit person. And he's like a monster, to be honest. And, I mean, like I said, when I run off and it was hiding, I think I was 8 years old when I first took off and started hiding. I think it was just hanging out with the different people that I did. You know, got into all these altercations in different places. I didn't look for it. It's just what happened.
Do you think there was a lot of people that you were hanging out in the streets that were in the same situation as you, but they never talked about it either? None of you ever talked to each other about it?
I think so. I think a lot of people in that era, not just in New Zealand, everywhere else, was going through different situations like that. I think it was just it probably was. We didn't talk about emotions as we do now. We don't see schizophrenia and people with mental issues these days as being a problem. Back then, it was a problem, but people didn't realize and know what it was. People just said, "Oh, look, that guy's fucking crazy." Yeah, like my brother Steve walking around with no clothes, trying to big guy swearing at the fucking, you know, at the sky when he was battling demons inside his mind. You know, I mean, he used to go on the bus with a motorcycle helmet, and he didn't even have a motorcycle, you know, because he was trying to block the noise up. Well,
but what did you think about that at the time? I mean, you know, now you recognize that Steve developed a really bad case of schizophrenia.
It was embarrassment. It was a shameful thing, and because people didn't realize, like in my culture, people would look at it as like weakness.
Yeah,
you know, people try and hide that and push it under the carpet. But the thing is, that's something we need to be talking about and put it to the forefront so people can go through it and understand what it was, what it is, and heal.
Do you think when you were an adult that was a sort of bit of a hidden shame for you as well? Because you recognised that what Steve needed was recognition, but all you could give him at the time was your own embarrassment.
Yes. I mean, I think survival of everyone in their own situation, that's basically what it was in that era, I think, to be honest.
One of the things I've always wanted to ask you about was when we started working together, you know, we'd signed up to do this book. I didn't know you. You didn't know me. We'd met once before. We sit down and you're really reticent to talk, which I completely understand because you'd never told anyone about the things that happened to you as a child. And the first thing that I said is, tell me about your dad. But why did you want to do the book?
Because Vanessa said, you know,
Vanessa, our publisher.
The publisher, she said she kept bringing me and I was in a, who's this motherfucker? I mean, you know, who's this bitch bringing me up? I was like, I'm going to blast her the fourth time she rang because I don't like people annoying me like that. But you know what got me with Vanessa? She's a really nice person.
Yeah.
And the way she spoke to me is like, you know, I was like, oh, you know, Mark, you can help people with this. And I'm thinking, help people? You know, it's not about money. I mean, even though I didn't have the money, you can help people. I said, oh, shit, that's a good thing. I can do that. I can help a lot of people, yeah.
But you must have known that you would have to talk about the stuff that happened to you as a kid to a stranger.
Yeah, but the thing is, I didn't know. You're talking to someone that didn't even know. Yeah. I don't even remember any of that garbage. Yeah, right. You know, I'm just thinking here, I remember lots of moments when I was getting beaten and the pain. That, you know, you don't want to remember that sort of stuff because it just makes you feel like you're lost, you're hurt. There's, you know, like that kid that just, you know, hammered all the time. That just,
and you'd be back in those emotions if you remembered it.
That's why I get depressed going out South Auckland sometimes, because you go there and it's like, fuck, this place is so depressing.
Yeah, it's dark.
You know, and it's depressing, and I just feel like necking myself. That's what that's what I feel like going there, because it's not hard to go back in the mind, because the mind's very powerful and strong. Yeah. And for me, you know, I can go back in my mind and get those emotions up in that sort of sense, and it's not good. I mean, you want to get the other emotions where you can help heal from that. And bringing all those childhood issues, it's not an easy thing for me. Even now, trying to deal with it now, you know. Yeah. Like I said, I killed my mother. I've still got to go and do my dad, and, you know. I've got so many issues because of these things, and I don't even realize that, you know, my relationship is, you know, bruh.
Yeah, but you're doing the work. I mean,
I'm trying my best, man. I'm trying my best. I'm trying to be a better person in society. I don't want to be this piece of shit person that's going to go back to jail, you know, because it's just not a good person. I want to live a happy life. I've made my mistakes. I've said my apologies. I've, you know, I don't owe no one nothing.
Mm.
You know, I'm just trying to be a better person. You know, I've gone through issues like everyone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Nice in the world, especially with COVID. But I know I'm getting better. I know I'm on the right track.
I mean, that's incredible. Because when we were working on the book, you had already done a lot of the work, right? Like, you and I sit down, we talked about so much of what had happened to you, and I was so incredibly proud of the things that you'd already been able to do. You know, there had been a lot of violence and sexual violence in your family, not just your father, other people, and you had broken that cycle already before you were ready to even talk about that. But you wouldn't give yourself any credit, you know. Like, when we were doing the book, and at the end of it, I remember I sat down with you and I go, man, you should be really proud of what you've already done.
Yeah.
Just in regards to your emotional health, and you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it was hard to, because, but even now, like, I give myself a lot of credit to, you know, I allow myself to cry. I mean, I don't allow myself. It's hard to. Yeah. Before it was hard to cry, but some of the issues I've had, I've been able to release that emotionally by, you know, crying. And for me, it's like weird to cry. It's like, fuck, you're a weak motherfucker. So, but it's okay to cry. One session I went home, I was, you know, I did a couple crying as I was biking. I went into the store and I had to buy something, and I started crying again. So I had to get out of the store and get on the bike and get out of there, because I was an emotional wreck. But
it felt good though afterwards, right?
It felt good because I released. It was like a release for me. I felt, I felt good about it. Yeah, and like talking to you before about the mindset about me not remembering, that's because I was living in the fear part of my mind, in the back part of my mind. I mean, I learned that from the reason why I don't remember a lot of it is because I was always scared as a kid. You know, I was scared about being hurt. And that's the problem. And that's when the fight or flight part of the mind is working with anybody, the other two ain't working. You don't remember shit. Mm. You're just in survival mode again. Oh, what's happening? So even I took that for 46 years. I bought that on, and something happened, because Mr. Andrews is like,
yeah,
well, the fuck's up? I'm like, who wants to run? You know what?
Yeah, because you think you're going to get killed. Because as a kid, there was a chance of you being killed. So you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
The reason I'm a great fighter is because affliction is part of fighting. And I'm a great survivor of affliction. So, yeah.
But not just that either. I mean, and this is something we talked about in the book. You know, you would have that fight or flight thing where you'd be like, what's going on? You know, what's going to happen? But you'd go into the ring or the octagon, and you knew it was a controlled environment. There was one person fighting. You know what the parameters were of the fight. So you were so calm, and that's something that helped you so much in your career.
Well, that's all. Yeah, that's why I've been competing as a fighter, even though I didn't want to be a fighter, you know, to this day, which is, you know, I'm 46 years of age, and age nearly 50.
Yeah.
Although I've gone through a breakup with certain things, I feel better emotionally as a person, as a man, as a 46-year-old male and growing. I mean, I'm single now. I'm talking to a shitload of girls. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, but I'm happier at heart. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes with different people.
But that's the thing.
And I do apologize, but I tell them, you know, I do apologize to these people, but I'm growing from these things.
Yeah, of course. But the breakup is really interesting, right? Because there are instances where a breakup is because of an emotional issue. But the breakup now is actually because you've managed to get over an emotional issue. And it's incredible the way that you and Julie, who's, you know, the mother of your kids and, you know, she's a great hero in the book, the way that you and Julie are doing it is really kind of mature and good for both of people. And the breakup you recognise is for her as well. It's not just for you.
For her, totally. I mean, we sit there talking about potential future partners.
Yeah.
I mean, she chose me, tells me the guy she's going, you know.
Which would have flown you into a rage 5 years ago.
Oh, dude, it's what I'm sitting against. I don't know. Is he real? I mean, she got catfished twice. I mean, as soon as they hear my name, they're freaking gone. I mean, and the guys that catfished, a couple of Nigerian guys. I'm like, the thing with Jules and these girls and these women is that, man, she's just got such a beautiful heart. Even though the Nigerian guy, tried to catfish her, she still had time to talk to these guys later as they come clean.
Yeah,
the guy comes clean, talks to Jules about it, and she's like, oh, he's a good guy. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, the guy just fucking trying to rip you off money and you're saying he's a good guy. I said, Jules.
Hey, man, she put up with your shit for 20 years.
23 years, but hey, but that's what she said. That's exactly what she said to me. And I'm thinking, the woman, especially like Jules, their hearts are so good. You know, she's loved me for so long. Even now, even after all my fucking faults, she's there. Even like with this guy, but you know, like I said, I want her to be happy.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why the things are the way they are. I mean,
she's
I don't want to get.
And she's helped you so
she's
much.
The best.
But you can't be together anymore. You know.
Oh no way. She needs. She deserves to be happy.
Yeah.
She's not going to get that kind of love from someone like me. I've got so many issues. I've got to sort out myself. And you know, and the thing about Jules, she's a ride or die girl. Because even though as much as I battled for all these years with her, I battled in myself with my emotionals. I took it out on her. Treated her bad. Even to this day, she's still here with me.
Yeah.
She's always had my back. There's, you know, some people that you get emotionally involved, they run as soon as you start turning crazy and stuff. They run and hide and become cowards. But with Jules, you know, I've done a lot of bad things to her, a lot. You know, I threatened to kill her family, everyone. I was like the worst fucking partner ever. But but she stuck with me. She's still here even now as we part ways. We'll always be in each other's lives. We have a lot of business together and different things.
Kids.
She's like, she's always here supporting me. And even with the fight coming up, she's got, she took all the fucking front row tickets. So, I mean, I've got to try and get more. She's inviting her potentially new partner. And I'm thinking, what? I was like, seriously, guys, you're inviting your potentially new partner.
Well, you can give poor Gallon a hiding, then you can come down and give this bloke a hiding.
I don't want to waste my time. I get paid to give people a hiding, but this is, you know, for me, before it would have been, I was like, what the fuck? It's like,
yeah.
But, you know, like you said before, I've grown as a man, especially with these issues. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, it'll be good to meet, even though I've met him before. But for me, like I said, I want her to be happy. I love her. I love her and I love, you know, and that's different kind of love from, you know, from, it was really hard with us before, you know, for a long, long time we were struggling with love, relationships and just a lot of things fucked us up.
Isn't it funny that, you know, you might get to a point where you can split with your missus and then the real love starts.
Proper. I mean, this is different. I just, like I said, I love her more than when I was actually together with her. I want her to be the happiest.
Yeah.
I think letting go of someone that you actually truly love and say, okay, man, I want you to be happy.
Yeah.
This, you know, that's the way I feel about it. And especially with someone that's given me 4 kids, she's rode the waves of fucking good and bad in these fucking treacherous waters of life, you know. And that's, especially as a fighter, a partner of a fighter, you know, gets beaten up all the time. It's good to see. You know, it's a different kind of love. It's the best kind, I feel.
Yeah. I just wanted to go back to when you were sort of talking about the fact that your childhood, you know, consciously you wouldn't even remember. Has your psychologist talked about the fact that even though you don't consciously remember some stuff, it's there and it's affecting you?
Yeah, it is. Of course, it always sits there.
Because you know it as well, because like once we started, so when we were doing the book, the first chapter is the most extreme stuff. It's the stuff that, you know, is I interviewed your sister quite a lot about that. I went to her place and sat down and we talked about it. But then when I read it to you, it was there. It just wasn't conscious for you until somebody talked to you about it.
Yeah, it's always stuff there that I have the feeling always my childhood, there's scars inside you in your mind. I mean, you know, our minds are strong. It's always, everything's locked in there. You just need to open the right door for it, go from there. Like I said, I'm just trying to make things, I can't change the past that's happened, but can only try and better.
Yeah. I want to go back again to when we were working together. I talked about that first chapter. I sat down with you in an apartment in New Zealand. You were training for a fight at the time. And you had inputted a little bit at that point, but not a lot. And I'd sat down with Victoria, and Victoria had sort of told me some of the stories. What was it like for you when you read that chapter out, when we started talking about the real hot button stuff?
Yeah, for me, it's like, does this actually was my life?
Mm.
As a kid, was this actually how we lived? It's not only just a surprise, but it's depressing. It's like, yeah, wow. To me, it seems normal.
Mm. But it did, know, at the time. You didn't think that anyone else had any other experience.
Yeah, that's the way it feels to me. Like I said, it's just like being numb to it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like growing up going, this is what it is. You get beaten up daily, you know, you get fucked up. Your skin gets, you get...
You're hungry all the time. You know,
the beatings weren't normal because I know I used to not go to school for like 3 weeks because I'd have welts all over me, this, you know, and you couldn't go to school because they'll see that. Mm. You know, it's... And it was not just one, it was many times that happened. But that feeling of when the skin's bruised that much and then the continue of the hurting on that same point of the skin, it just makes you real numb. It's like it's like a dull feeling. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You get that with fighting sometimes. When I was kickboxing, you get that feeling. It's like, oh, wow.
Do you get that sense memory sometimes that, you know, you have the pain after a fight of being kicked or punched and then remembering, you know, that time when you were beaten by a father as a kid, or the times that you were beaten?
As a fighter, it's better because there's a purpose behind that.
Yeah, so you understand it, you recognize it.
I understand, you know, the life of a fighter. I understand affliction and I feel, you know, I feel my job is done well when I'm, you know, those are well-earned bruises and scars because of, you know, it's not the childhood ones that you get from your father or, you know,
That was an interesting thing in the book because you felt compelled to buy your dad a house once you did start making money.
When I think about it, it blows my mind. Why did you do that?
Yeah. But you really felt compelled to do it. Like,
yeah, I don't know why.
It was the first thing you wanted to do with money.
I don't know why, though. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know why.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with, you know, I didn't even have no idea why. I was just like, okay.
What I thought was going on was you thought that you could buy your way out of this memory. You know, you could give your dad a house and you wouldn't have to think about him and it anymore. That door would just be closed.
But then I've done my duty as a son.
Yeah, exactly. But it didn't work like that. Yeah.
You're probably right. I mean, they're probably right. I think you can do that in a lot of situations, buy a way out of it if you had the money.
Yeah, but it doesn't work like that. Your memory still exists.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't work like, it never worked like that.
He's still your dad.
He's still my dad. People ask me, that, how do you feel about him? I'm like... I mean, Stephanie asks me all the time, how do you feel? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, she's tried to tell me I've got to hate him. This, I mean, put the hate on other things. I don't hate him.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just don't hate him. I got the chance to do that to my mother. I didn't even know why I can't have these feelings. And she goes, you've got to recognize your feelings and try and, you know, turn them to the right way. I mean, I just don't know why.
Your brother had, or he does have quite severe schizophrenia. John, your older brother, who sadly took his own life, had severe depression, and you were exhibiting symptoms of of schizophrenia as well. You know,
bipolar. A lot of people have said that to me, that you're fucking crazy.
Well,
and the CT that I've got now, they're saying you got CT. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I've met people that have got CT.
You haven't got CT. You're becoming more lucid, not less lucid.
Bro, I swear to God, some people said, Mark, you've got bipolar. I get bipolar when motherfuckers piss me off.
when you were younger, you did have these symptoms of potential mental health issues.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing about it is that you have managed to continue to forge this career. You know, there was never a time where you just fell off the cliff. You know,
Jumped off the fucking cliff like my brother.
Yeah, exactly.
But
there has always been some sort of grasp with something that you wanted to do, something that you wanted to achieve, you know, and fighting has been that.
Yeah.
And you never fell off.
Yeah, because I want to get to that place. I want to get to that high level. I want to get to that fucking, that green pastures where I'm just sitting there. When people ask me or call me and say, what do you want to do, Mark? Or what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I'm doing whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever the fuck I want. And if that means it's going to lie in that fucking paddock, that's what I'm doing.
That's funny because we talked about that. We were like, what does retirement look like for you? And you said, it's a really comfortable chair and I got a big drink and I got my TV and I don't have to do anything. Like, that's not really what other people are looking for.
Well, that's what I want to do. I've been battling in my mind for years and years and years. And some people call that crazy, but that's my life. I've been battling for years and I want to get to that place, the happy place where I'm just, everything's okay, everyone I know and love is okay, secure with everything. And, you know, when people ask you, like I said, what you want to do? I'm like,
nothing.
I just want to go and do whatever I want to do, take the kids to school, feed the horses or whatever the fuck it is. I just want to, I don't want to have to do anything.
Yeah. How do you feel about thinking about those moments where you were driven by, you know, rage or maybe even grief and trauma or whatever it was, and now you recognise that it doesn't happen anymore or nowhere near as much? I mean, I would still not cut you off in traffic. It's not a great idea. But do you sit down and go, oh, man, I am moving in the right direction?
I'm growing, a lot. There'd be incidents where things change like that, but, as a man and a person of society that wants to be a better person in society, of course I've grown a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, like with anything, it takes three things to make a situation real bad. And then you could be on that other foot saying, oh, fuck, I just killed someone. Now you're fucked. Everyone's fucked around you because because you've done something wrong. You didn't think about it.
Yeah.
I think that's just not me. That's like a lot of people. A lot of people in this day and age with a lot of things that are happening with COVID, with their situations. A lot of people are suffering with these days. I mean, assault on family members have gone up fucking so much here in Australia. Abuse, everything's gone up. I mean, people just want to be happy and okay these days. I mean, what that looks like in their world, I don't know. What looks like that in my world is, like I've just explained, in those green paths where you don't have to chuck the phone away and they do shit.
Yeah. Now, you do advocacy in your own way, right? So there's lots of people. If somebody approaches you on your Facebook page or something like that, I'm having a problem with this, I'm having a problem with that, you know, like having read the book and knowing the experiences that you've had before, you engage with them. Do you think post your fighting career that this advocacy might end up being a little bit more structured, that you might work with an organisation? Because it kind of feels like...
I want to.
Yeah.
I want to start my own foundation for troubled kids and teens and help them for better futures. I've always wanted to help disadvantaged kids. You know, I was one. Yeah. I'm still struggling with life. And I think the kids that come from there become adults and they still struggle with it. So they need to be nurtured all the way through, especially, you know, we look at fighters and things like this with the CT, all this sort of stuff. The fighters that these people are taking advantage of, they have kids and everything that come with it. They're not just a package by themselves. They're a whole pack. They're family members. And when he suffers, they suffer.
Mm.
You know, and you've got to go and help those guys after their career, post-career. They've got to help these guys that go into the world and do other things. Some people find it really hard, the ones that climb to those really heights of fighting and become the best in the world, that everyone knows them. Guys like Connor, all these guys, and Jones, after their careers, what do they do, you know? Do they need help with becoming normal? You know, some people struggle when they've been flying high for so long. You know, they don't get pushed in front of the queues. They don't have to wait in lines. When they come to normality, He was 10 years old. You know, you have to wait in lines. You got to do all this. People are hard to. People can't cope with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's reality, though.
The last thing I wanted to ask you was, Noah is 12 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Noah's your second eldest son in your second relationship, and he's.
Well, my first relationship wasn't actually a relationship.
You know? No, but you had two kids. You know. So Noah's pretty good athlete, big kid, you know, he's got the attitude. How would you feel about Noah becoming a fighter? Do you want that for him or would you like something else for him?
To be honest, in truth, I'd like something else for him.
Yeah.
It's hard to be eating and sitting at the top table, especially in the fight business. It's hard to sit at the top table for that amount of years and do the walk every single time and be able to eat properly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that fall on the way. So a lot of guys that want to be top-end fighters, but they don't make it. And while they're chasing their dream, they're young. You know, as they get along, they meet their partner, spouse, they have kids. Then the whole lot of them are in trouble. Mm-hmm. So remember, there's not many people that can eat at the top table. Then they've got to do something with their lives and their partners and their kids' lives. So, you know, it changes.
Mm.
So for me, no. I mean, I'm trying to make things better for fighters in general. With the steroids and the fucking the fair go and even fighting playing field and the Ali Act, so that the fighters come through, the boys and girls from this side of the world, don't have to worry about struggling with this sort of fight. They have to just go in there and be good enough, and then they get all the benefits.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks so much for doing this, and you know,
always a pleasure. Always here to help, and
it's such a pleasure to talk to you about this kind of stuff.
Oh, it's actually really good to sit down and you have a yarn with you, Ben, especially about life and everything.
It's like the olden days, like when we're working on the book together.
Nah, that was different, man. You know, I was too busy sitting there talking shit. not enjoying shit, but yeah.
No, it felt for me like, I don't know.
You were like...
You were talking about it for the first time, which is great. You know, you weren't talking
first time, and I never talked about it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, for me, it's like, ooh, fuck, this is a new experience. It's But, you know, if there wasn't just me. There'd be millions of people.
Yeah. Well, I've never done anything like that before, and it was unique in my career. And, you know, it's awesome to see that you're still doing the work and you're getting happier every day.
Correct. Yeah. That's the main thing. Thanks for the time, bro. And cheers, always here to help.
That was Mark Hunt, a very different bloke to the one that I first met. Or at least when I first met Mark, I didn't have access to that Mark. If you're interested in reading the book Born to Fight, it's available at Amazon and Booktopia and online retailers. You can probably still get it in a bookstore as well, but it's a few years old, so just call ahead, make sure that it's in stock. As always, this podcast was recorded at Acast Studios in Sydney. If you want to keep up with me and the show, you can go to my Instagram at Benny Mook, BennyMck, or Facebook, Ben McKelvey Writer, or you can follow Mark Hunt on Instagram, where he's Mark Hunt Fighter. Outside of that, thank you for listening and follow your bliss.
What if the writer is attempting to create a story where nothing much happens, where people don't change? More reflection of the real world.
Nothing happens in the world? Are you out of your fucking mind?
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.